You're listening to Irish Radio Canada's Home and Abroad, and today I'm going to start in a little unusual way, in that I'm going to read an obituary. And I'm reading the obituary of William Robert Edwards, and he was born on the 15th of March 1893 in Ballinamallard, County Fermanagh, Northern Ireland, and he was the son of a blacksmith. Later in life he moved to Londonderry, where he met and married Annie Guthrie and raised three sons and four daughters. He loved people, was always interested to know what made them tick, and was happiest with helping somebody. Hence his career as pensions officer, travelling around the country helping people fulfil that goal. He spent every moment reading, mostly the classics, his greatest pleasure, and indeed became most knowledgeable about almost any topic. He felt that reading books should become an important part of everybody's life, not only to be read, but to be studied and analysed. He was also an active as a ham radio operator in the 1950s. While in his 80s, he travelled to New Zealand and spent 7 months with his daughter and her family there. He loved children and was happy when they were near. He had great respect for the church and served on the advisory board of his church in Londonderry for many years. His worship and friends at St. James meant a great deal to him. He gave much of himself to others all his life and has left a strong impression on all of us who knew him. However, he demanded nothing for himself except to be able to see, which was denied him. And that was written by his daughter. And I'm here chatting with his grandson, Paul Edwards. Paul is living in the suburbs of Ottawa, and compiled a book which I had the opportunity to read. And it was the letters that Paul's grandfather had composed and written and shared, because the book is entitled A Man of Letters. And it's in a number of parts, part one. And this is also relevant because it's not reflected in the obituary. It was from Londonderry to New York, and it was a travel diary in the 1930s. What modern invention appeals to me most? The magic carpet of our world, 1963. And then part two, letters, Orillia, Canada, 1973-74. And part three, there's some old photos and personal documents. Part four is letters when he went to New Zealand, Orillia, 1973 to 1983. Paul, first of all, thanks for sending me on a copy of the book, and a pleasure to meet you, and welcome.
Thank you very much, Austin. It's a pleasure to be here, and thank you for expressing interest.
A man of letters, you know, you is the obituary identifies your granddad didn't get the opportunity to have a formal academic education because his father died young and he had to take over the family business as a blacksmith and become the provider. And yet, learning was such a critical and important part of how what he considered life to be all about.
Absolutely, Austin. And granddad was born in a different era. And as you can tell by the date when he was born, and he was the second born of 10 children in rural Northern Ireland, in Ballinamallard, which is a very small little village, which I have not been to yet and plan to go to this summer. But he had unfortunately he was thrust into a manual labor job by the time he was before the age of 10, I believe, from my records, as his father, his father, James Edwards, was the blacksmith of the village, swinging an anvil, hard manual labor. And he unfortunately was killed on the main street of Ballinamallard by the first automobile to run through the town, known as in the book as a horseless carriage. And unfortunately, he was fatherless during his formative years, and he had no choice in the matter but to keep money coming in. And I believe he was a bit of a bike mechanic at a young age. Bicycles were very common in those parts, as we all know. and became ran the blacksmith shop as much as he could. So no money within the family, thrust upon very difficult circumstances. But he always had this quest for learning and a desire to learn more, extremely well-read. And the title of this book, as you can see, is a double entendre, meaning that he was a man of letters, always in communication with his family and friends across the world throughout his life. He was a real journalist and blogger of his time, but also the post-nominal letters he was denied. And he could have very well have gone on to university, on to academic greatness. And I think he knows that and harbors quite regret, quite frankly, of what could have become of his life should he have chosen a different path. And he had the opportunity to do that, too, and declined, which makes it sad.
And I think, as you say, Paul, that is reflective of the time in that a lot of that generation, your grandfather, my grandfather, it wasn't a time when access to education was universal by any means. And there would have been a need for a family to have both the financial resources to send somebody and also the ability, the recognition of the value of an academic education, which, again, given the times in the north of Ireland, wasn't necessarily obvious.
Absolutely, Austin. And it's unfortunate because he does make references to many of the great universities of the world throughout his writings about his friends' children that went off to university and college to go on to great professions, and his nephews and other associations he had of people that have gone on and chosen the academic path with success and things that come from it. And there's a little point of the book that I want to just quickly read that I only discovered a few months back, and it was from these recordings I received. So Granddad's eyesight was so poor throughout his life, and he resorted to taping letters on a cassette player in the late 70s and early 80s in a last grasp to still communicate. And one of the letters, I have four tape recordings, and one of the recordings he said, he laments a turning point from his youth, an opportunity that he had to become a Londoner. And as a teenager, a London institute had offered a scholarship and a lump sum of $200 and free boarding for 2 years. The institute advertised a writing competition in newspapers across all of Ireland on a subject that deeply interests him. So, Granddad, he entered. And at the time, Granddad said, he already won something else, a girl who loved and a girl that he married. And when the results were announced, he was the winner. But her mother said he would have regarded him as a thief, as he had already stolen her daughter, and to take her away to London as well would have been unforgivable. So unfortunately, Granddad had to turn that scholarship down. And on the recording, his voice softens a bit and he says, what would have been the course of my life, he wonders, if I had accepted it? As I read that to you, Austin, I some hair is going up on my arms here just from that moment of reflection, and at the time he would have been, I think, 80 years of age, mid-80s actually, when he recorded this. Mm-hmm. So it really was moving to me.
Mm-hmm. Given the challenges that he had in his upbringing and having to take responsibility at such a young age, you start out with what was a journey to New York, and he would have been 37 approximately.
Correct.
And that was very much, that's really where you pick up your granddad's life.
Absolutely, and there's been a bit of a twist to that fact since you and I connected on email a month or two ago. And the story on this is that when my father passed away, my mother began the process of downsizing, and with that, I inherited and was given a very large manila envelope of all these letters and writings that Granddad did over the many, many years, and a little red travel journal book here from 1930, to New York City. And this is the oldest artifact that I have of all of the collections. And it is not, it is, the penmanship is beautiful, mistake-free, and very well written. And I read through it, and it's not signed by anybody, but I had assumed this was written by Granddad in 1930. And I'm thinking, this is where I'm going to start my book. This is the oldest piece. This is the logical path to take here. So I did. And over the last few months, my book has made it over to distant family members in Ireland. And the Edwards family and the Paget family are very close in Northern Ireland. And I've come to virtually meet a cousin of mine in Northern Ireland. And he is the historian on that side of the ocean, where I'm the historian on this side of the ocean. And he has politely corrected me and said, Paul, that travel journal is not from Granddad Edwards. It's actually from great-grandmother Edwards, his mother, Emily Sloan Edwards. And I'm like, I have no way of validating this. It's not signed by anybody, you know. And he had sent me on email a copy of the a photo scan of the manifest of the ship. And her name is in there on July 7th, 1930. And I'm like, oh, my goodness, I need to make a correction. So I was quite, this is very recent news, so I'm going to make that modification. But at the time, she was 65, and she was going to see her younger brother, her younger son in Brooklyn, who was an engineer. And she was 65 at the time. So this is a different and welcome twist to this project.
But it's also interesting then that the journaling and that whole discipline is something that was in the family and was coming down through.
I absolutely agree. And when I came to realize this point, I felt like wow, like I thought I was running, it was flawless. And I'm thinking, well, it's quite obvious where Granddad got his writing prowess in descriptive ways of expressing himself but with pen and typewriter over many, many decades. And he also did a lot of writing in his community. He was a member of the church. He as a traveling pensions officer, he was in did a lot of communication as well with that role at the time. The writing to me seemed very similar from the travel journal to the compositions to the letters. So it all tied together quite neatly, I found when I discovered this.
So logically, it would sound like that your great grandmother was homeschooling your granddad, and that he was a good learner.
You know, Austin, I think that's likely what happened. I never thought it. Yeah, she. I've heard updates from my new family members that I've just described, that great grandmother Edwards was a very classy and very, very warm and endearing person, right? And respected by many. And she, she must have homeschooled those her 10 children, you know, from the period of 1891 to early 10 years of homeschooling or longer, right? Is what I can gather. And Granddad could have been one of the best students of his brothers and sisters, for all I know. But from what I can tell, they all went on to do good things and great things. And the apple doesn't fall far from the tree, as the old expression goes.
So then really the story doesn't pick up in chapter one of part one. The story now picks up in chapter two, which is, what modern invention appeals to you the most? And your granddad considered that it was the radio.
Yeah. And thanks for bringing that up. And that is one of my favorite pieces in all the artifacts that I was able to put together. And this was written in 1935. And I have it here on photocopy. And that's his handwriting from 1935. And it's two pages long. And he says almost 100 years ago. And he says his answer is unequivocally wireless technology. And he's using the word wireless in 1935, which is what we use in 2026 every day. So he was ahead of his times in his thinking. and his appreciation for inventions that were coming about at that part of the century. And I loved how he said, in our house, we have a little oblong box, and it is not unlike a superior kind of tool chest. A plain exterior gives no hint of its extraordinary magical powers. These powers are so amazing that Aladdin, if he could but see and hear it, would scorn his fabulous lamp with envy. Like, he's writing for an audience, and I won't read it all, but it's in the book, and it goes on further than that. And I was just really captivated by these words. And I also came to realize that Grandad was a ham radio operator in the 1940s. And my late father, Archie, had mentioned that to me a long, long time ago. And also my newfound Edwards connections as well have said, your granddad in Derry on 108 Spencer Road, just under the slated roof, ran a little wireless, ham radio project from the upper bedroom through using the ether, and he needed a wireless license at the time. And my dad, as a youngster, was involved with that tinkering too. So it really, it amazed me even more when I found that out, Austin.
So then I don't want to go through every chapter, we'd be here all day, but then part two, you head into the letters, Aurelia, 1973-74. At this stage, your granddad is 80. And was that when he arrived in Canada?
No, I don't. The earliest letters I have, I believe, start in 1973. But granddad and my grandmother, they came over to Canada in the mid-1960s, I believe. And he bought a house on Albert Street in Aurelia. Sadly, grandmother's wife died. My grandmother died. I was, I think, 9 months old when she passed. And then he sold the house, and they didn't have yet for a few years, not that long, I don't believe. And then went to live with his daughter, Evelyn, and then husband, John, and cousin, Stephen. And so begin the letters from that point where, you know, that was very common. Granddad and grandmother would live with their kids, right? Back then, and still do. So
Paul, who was the first to emigrate?
The first to emigrate that I'm aware of, well, my dad came over in 1953, and he was 20.
Okay.
And then we have some, and I'm still learning this with my new connections over to the Edwards side. And there was some Edwards family that came over to Michigan, in the U.S. My dad's older sister, Doreen, emigrated to, I believe, Rhode Island, and then lived in Florida. And, those are the ones that I can think of that I can think of for now.
On this side. And then there was also
on this side.
And then there was a New Zealand emigration trail.
Yes. So that's a great point. So my Aunt Muriel and her husband, Jim Asquith, Jim was a Kiwi, Muriel was Irish. They lived in the Toronto area in this 1960s for a little while. And then the husband, Jim, decided to take the family to New Zealand, where he was from. And that's a massive distance. Off they went. And they had three children, Tony, Michael, and Susie. That's a huge distance, right? But granddad lived there for a number of years, as I indicate in the letters. And he went there, and he enjoyed the climate. He enjoyed the people. He enjoyed the beauty and the historical connection and similarities of Christchurch, New Zealand, where he lived in Sumner, which is nearby, to like the architecture, the schools, Canterbury. Like, he loved it. He really enjoyed living there, and that comes out in the letters.
So my reading then is that he effectively probably retired and emigrated when he was 70.
Yeah, that's what I believe so. I don't have records of that, but that's likely the case.
Well, when I'm putting the years together, given when he was born and when things start. So at 70, he started a second life. And what he was doing from that age on was the kind of thing you'd expect of somebody in their early 20s, in like heading to New Zealand, spending a number of time, coming back to Orillia. Just the whole life at that stage, when you think someone is winding down, he's only gearing up.
You're absolutely right. And I'm thinking, here's a man with poor eyesight and hearing, you know, shuffling around like on a 1,400 kilometer flight from Toronto to Los Angeles to New Zealand to live there for years and really have the assistance of his daughter Muriel and family help him out with his needs that he would need. And he met many great people there, and he does write about that in the letters. But he was ramping up; he was not ramping down. Absolutely. So his travel combined with his writing was very, very constant, I believe, it throughout his later years of life.
And one of the things that is very obvious as I was going through the book is that, and we've referred to it, is that his writing style is so rich in description that you can see what he's writing.
Absolutely, Austin. And when I first got this manila envelope of letters a dozen or so years ago from my mom, I read through them, and I'm like, these are so well written. I knew we always had them, but I never really jumped into them, right? You get busy with life, family, jobs. You don't, I just knew it was there, but never really jumped into it. And I was a history major in university, so I'm naturally drawn to this. And I started to read them, and I'd share little excerpts on my Facebook to my friends and family. And the comments I was getting back were like, whoa, Paul, this is fantastic. I had a little following from Grandad's letters. And they were like, there was call out to post more. And this is great. And what's the next one? Right? So, that's how the spark was lit, right, to do this, and I enjoyed the process of breaking it down and assembling it all. But to your point, he was so descriptive in how he wrote; it was as if he was writing for an audience at all times to all people, which is very rare and probably a lost art form, I think, too.
And you did mention earlier on that, you know, as his sight deteriorated, he migrated to the tape recorder. I know my father did the same thing. And I know others of that generation, my brother-in-law who lives here, his father did the same thing. And there were tapes going back. The cassette tapes were going back. And you had 45 minutes or 30 minutes on each side. So it was a generational thing, whereas now, as you also make reference, it was pre-WhatsApp. So there was the ability to instantly communicate wasn't there, and phone calls were expensive. But it was interesting also, as I said, to see that the migration was there and the recognition of this is the way I need to communicate and not to resist it.
Absolutely, and I make reference in the book that I believe Granddad knew everybody that worked at these post offices, and the postal staff knew him. An older man, you know, coming down the road. He wasn't a big man. He was, he was not large in stature by any means. He smoked a pipe, which I have his pipe right here, which is on the cover of the book. He would it was his job. It was maybe a self-preservation to keep his mind fresh and active to communicate. And he wrote with purpose and love, right? How are you doing? How are things going? How is the family? How have things changed? You know, please write back and let me know how things are going. I need to know, right? And that was the kind of tone that he would write in. Yeah, I have many of these letters, Austin, but, you know, these letters are also in drawers and cabinets in Ireland and in New Zealand, I believe, too. And they were kept because they were so well written is really the reason why. Any letters we usually read them and they kind of get, you know, thrown in the trash, you know, after a little while. You know, this was almost like a volume of letters, which is what I have. And
The other thing I found fascinating was that you found his log of sent and received correspondence. It reminded me of my own early days, my first job. I worked in the Bank of Ireland, and the first thing that happened in the morning was there was the registry of the mail. So the mail came in and you opened it and you wrote in a book exactly what letter had come in, who it was from, before it was distributed. And then there was logged that it had been responded to. It just was fascinating to see that discipline was also being practiced.
I couldn't agree with you more. My cousin Stephen in Vancouver says, well, why don't you come out to Vancouver? I have a trove of granddad's old letters and passports and writings and, expired driver's licenses and artifacts. And I'm like, okay, this is about 3 years ago. So I flew out and I went through this musty old briefcase and I saw this blue book. And it was his ledger, I think, of just as he just described, Austin, of what was coming, what mail came in, by who and date. And what he sent out, and it was full, this blue book that I looked at, and I think I put a picture of it in the book. That's just the level of record keeping he kept, and which probably goes back to his employment days as a pensions officer, keeping detailed records of families and documents and important communication as well. So just not surprising at all that he did that.
Paul, if anyone wants to get a copy of this, where is it available?
Right. Well, thank you, Austin. So I've published it in March. It's on Amazon worldwide. And you'd need to search on A Man of Letters, then my name, Paul Edwards, and then you'll see my book come up. And that's where it is.
Now, I know he had a favorite piece of music. He wrote the lyrics to a song, and I understand you do have the recording of it. It's The Secret of the Leprechaun, and it was recorded by the Sons of Erin, who were a Toronto group. I think, if I'm not mistaken, I think one of them may have been Davy O'Donoghue. And if it was, Davy is still here living in Ottawa. I'm not sure. But I remember hearing the Sons of Erin and meeting somebody who had been involved with them. But maybe we can get a recording of that and share that as a means of celebrating further the fantastic person your granddad was.
Austin, I could not agree more with you. I will task you to upload that song and recording to conclude this. I really appreciate that.
Paul, it's been a real pleasure chatting with you, and it's been it was a wonderful read. And as Paul said, if you do a search on Amazon, put in Paul's name, Paul Edwards, A Man of Letters, it'll pull the two together, and you get your details on where you can get a copy of it. And again, thanks so much, Paul, for taking the time.
Thank you very much, Austin. I appreciate it, and have a great day.